What's going on, everybody? Welcome back to the Drain Plug Podcast presented by Tiny Boat Nation or TBNation.net. Visit TBNation.net for all of your John boat needs, dry hatches, lithium batteries, electric outboards, EVA foam.
All the things.
All the things that you're going to need. And we have a pretty good episode today, I think. We're going to kind of go with that trend of the last podcast of doing the boats and bourbon. This week, we're kind of on a Knob Creek kick, I guess you could say, right?
Yeah, we're going to try a few different Knob Creeks tonight. We're going to start out with the regular release Knob Creek 9-year. And then we're going to try, this is the 100 proof, not store pick, just a regular old off-the-shelf Knob Creek 9. And then we're going to try the Knob Creek store pick single barrel.
My favorite.
That's 120 proof.
120.
And then you brought in the Knob Creek 12.
Knob Creek 12.
Which is a 100 proof? Hundo?
Yeah, so 100 and 100.
And then 120.
Yeah, which is pretty interesting. So, as for boats.
What are we talking about tonight?
Oh, man, we got a pretty good topic.
What are we doing?
It's going to sound very clickbait-ish, but it's not. We're 100% serious in this podcast right now.
Cheers. We are? Cheers. What are we serious about?
About the topic of the boats for that portion of today's.
Lay it on me. What are we doing?
We're going to be talking about the best time to build your boat, which is going to sound, which kind of sounds stupid, right?
No, not when you answer the phones at this place.
We love you guys. Call us every day.
Yeah, call us every day. But I'm dead serious. We get a phone call almost every single day that starts with, I need product XYZ, and I got to have it tomorrow because I got to have it turned. I got a tournament.
Dude, this smells so good.
It is pretty good. I'm going to let it settle for a few.
The regular 9 is kind of a sleeper. I don't really think about it too much, but.
Yeah, it's decent. Is that good?
Yeah, that's good.
That's good.
I like that one. I guess I am thinking about it as far as the best time of year and then the reasons why.
Okay.
It's the best time of year.
Okay.
There's a bunch of different reasons why.
Roll with it.
We get extremely busy and swamped starting that, what would you say, beginning of March, that first 70-degree weather day.
Yes, in the south. It's still cold up north. In the south.
We understand you folks in Canada. I'm sorry.
Yeah, y'all still got ice.
But down here, it's about 70 degrees sometime in March, sometimes April. But that's when everyone realizes that they have a boat.
Yes.
Or they remember about the boat.
Yes, they wake up one morning and they're like, oh, look, it's 68.2 degrees outside. I'm going fishing. And they're like, oh, wait, hold on, I got all this crap I got to do to my boat.
If you're thinking that, everyone else is thinking that.
Yes.
And that's when things around here start getting extremely busy.
Yes.
So.
And it's not just us. It's everybody in the marine industry. Correct. I have talked to many, many vendors and manufacturers and people like us that are dealers for different products, and they all have the exact same complaint. It's, you know, dead in December after Christmas. January is pretty quiet. February is kind of like meh. And then it's like somebody just turns on a light switch one day in February or early March, and it's like the floodgates have opened with people, and they all need stuff done at the same time.
They all need stuff done at the same time.
But we're talking more for the people that are at home building it for themselves, because the way I see it is once you realize that you need to be building a boat, it's usually because it's that time of year.
Mm-hmm.
It's time to get on the water. But by that time, you're already too late.
Yeah.
You're behind the eight ball before you even get started. Because what made you want to build a boat in the first place is it's nice weather outside.
Correct.
And then we see a lot of people wind up spending a lot of time, money, and frustration trying to get their boat right. And they usually can't complete it before their fishing season is over.
Correct.
Especially for you bass fishing guys, because y'all have a short window of opportunity before the spawn starts.
Yeah.
And then fishing in the spawn can be tough.
Yeah.
Some people, their favorite time to fish.
Mm-hmm.
And then right after the spawn, how does fishing go?
A couple different ways. I mean, most of the time it's not. It's obviously not as nice to be out there during the summer.
Yes. That's the thing, is by the time the fishing gets good again, it's too hot. So hot you don't want to go fishing.
Miserable. And then you're thinking of other options, going to other places, doing other things. But, you know, it is an entire marine industry. But for us specifically, that's where things like dry hatches end up getting, like, long lead times. Mm-hmm. And we're not able to get things out extremely fast. You know, I guess a lot of people blame us for, but I don't think much of it's in our control.
No.
You know, realistically, starting, you know, here in September is probably the best time to start your build, I would think.
For a bass fisherman?
For a guy doing it out of his own, the guy that's going to build his boat at his house, I just think that's the best time to start.
Yeah, the only reason I would say wait a little bit longer is this is the season where we're coming into fall, where fishing does tend to get really, really good. Right. And if you're in the middle of a boat build during that, like, late August, early September, going into October, you could be missing out on some of the best fishing of the year, depending on what species you're going after. I know bass fishing, that's usually true. Always been true. And then y'all have a little bit of a break before it gets cold. Like, right. When I say cold, I mean, for you guys up north below freezing temperatures, y'all can't bass fish anyways because you have to go drive a bulldozer over ice lakes.
You know those guys have, like, seasons, too.
I know.
On, it's like, weird. Special fish. Regular fish.
It's so weird. But down here, when the water drops in that 50-degree and below range, that's some of the best fishing of the year. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're going to be fishing with the cold water tournaments this year that starts in December.
Mm-mm.
When does it start?
September.
September? Oh, September. Okay. My bad.
Through December into January.
Okay. So, I mean, y'all are literally in the coldest part of the year for
us. And then the
us.
Next regular season stuff starts end of January.
Mm. Okay.
Like last week in January.
Well, so for me, if bass fishing was my primary reason for building my boat, or I was going after a fish that's like bass where they have an early spring season, a spawn, and then the summertime is just way too hot to work on, or way too hot to be fishing, that would actually be when I would prefer to go work on my boat, is when it's too hot to fish.
Yeah, but then it's really hot to work on your boat, too.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a give and take.
It is. No, it is, yeah.
But, like, for me personally, with catfishing, you know, our catfish spawn usually happens sometime between Labor Day and, is it Labor Day or is it Memorial Day? Memorial Day and 4th of July, which is also one of the hottest part of the year. But that's actually this year when I got time to work on my boat, is because the fish don't really bite that well during the spawn. And there's no point in going out there and wasting time fishing if you know they're not going to bite, at least for catfish.
Right. I would just like, I don't know. I guess it's just something that we wanted to bring to everybody's attention as far as, like, it is kind of something to be cautious of when you're planning this whole thing out. Because a lot of people aren't, that's, I guess, a whole other topic, but planning out your build.
Yeah.
This would fall into that category. And it also falls into the category of things that a lot of people don't do.
Yeah.
Plan out your build really well. And if you know, base it off of what you have to work with. If you're outside working in a shed, probably not going to be doing it in the winter.
Probably not. Well, and one of the reasons that I would tell people to shy away from doing it, like, going into peak fishing season, is you wind up rushing on stuff.
Yeah.
Especially your teardown and your prep. We see a lot of people that do their teardowns wrong, or they wind up putting more holes in the boat that really didn't need to be there, or they cut something out of a boat that really didn't need to be cut out because they were in a rush trying to get their boat done because season was quickly approaching, instead of doing it during, you know, off season, whatever that season would be for you. But that we also see the biggest rushes in paint prep. People don't take the time to paint the inside of their rod lockers and latches and hatches and stuff like that. And then they having to go back and do it after the fact. And it's really, really difficult to do when the boat's finished out.
Yeah.
Same thing with the outside. There's a lot of people don't want to spend time sanding and, you know, like doing the Anthony thing with the Bondo and the kitty hair and all that stuff to make it look nice on the outside, but also prep it right. They get into a big rush because they know they got a tournament next weekend.
Well, and here's another deceiving factor that we've learned over the years is, and I guess Tiny Boat Nation in general is kind of guilty for this. We've always tried to repurpose as much as we can in the boat.
Yes.
Further. And that has come to kick us in the rear end a bunch of times.
Mm-hmm.
90% of the time, it's easier just to take everything that's in the boat out of the boat and start fresh.
I can't tell you how many boat builds that we've done where we tried to leave like the front deck of a tracker in and cut it just enough to fit hatches in it and then go in there and clean out all that stupid foam. And we wound up spending twice as much time working in it than we would have if we would just cut it out, taken everything out, and started fresh.
Because guess what? When you cut it out, you have to restructure it.
Yes.
And that's something you don't think about when you're cutting it out.
Yes.
And that can be very difficult working into that area, like rear bench seats or something like that. That becomes a nightmare.
Before we go too much further into this topic, what's your thoughts on the Knob Creek standard release 9-year?
It kind of surprised me. I forgot that it was that good.
How long has it been really since you had it?
Like a sit-down pour of it, it's been a while. And for those of you wondering, where's the 18?
Good luck.
Please visit tbnation.net. No.
Yeah, you had to buy a lot of
the 18 is about, that. Yeah, the 18 is one I definitely don't have yet. I could have bought the 18 when I bought this 12, but the old lady was like, you've spent enough money.
Yeah, well, it's just like boats. It bust out another 1,000 when it comes to them high-dollar allocated bourbons.
They just print more of it. I don't know what you're worried about.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
I'm not very proficient in the older age statement stuff, but that Weller 12 I have is 100 proof, too. So I don't know if that's like a common 12-year thing or not.
Depends on the distillery. Mm. Some do higher, some do lower. Just depends.
This is a Beam product as well, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
So we've done two Beam products back-to-back. Now, I'm going to be honest with you. We just opened this not too long ago. We had a little event at the house. A lot of the guys that came over like bourbon. I opened up this one for everybody. And I was not a fan of this the other night when I tried it.
I'm going to give it a minute before I say anything.
Maybe I hyped it up too much in my head.
You do that. Well, I mean, that's easy to do when you got, you know, rare allocated high dollar stuff. And I wouldn't say the 12 is like super rare or allocated, but you're not going to find it at every store you walk into.
This has more of that alcohol-y smell to it.
It definitely smells hotter on the nose than the 9 does.
But I can still smell that same flavor profile from the 9.
Yeah, I'm getting a little bit more of the sweet oak in that one than I did in the 9.
You're right.
But I also get a little bit more caramel and less of that peanut than I did in the 9.
It's better than it was the other night, but it's still, to be honest with you, I'd rather sip on the 9 than that.
I'm going to hang on for a second before I say anything, but we'll see. Back to our discussion about boat building. So you were talking about ripping boats apart, and we've done one too many where we've had to deal with old foam. And I think that's one of the things that a lot of people skimp on is taking the old foam out of the boat because, well, one of two things. One, because it sucks and it's not any fun. It takes forever, especially if it's waterlogged because it stinks.
Yeah.
But the other one is I think people get into a rush and they don't want to remove the foam because they know they're going to have to put foam back in the boat or they're under the perception that they need to.
That, and it's probably also an expense thing.
Yeah, foam's not as cheap as it used to be.
Honestly, think about it. If you're ripping out a boat, like, why would you rip out the foam if you got to replace the foam?
I can tell you why, because it probably weighs as much as a boat does.
Well, yeah, but, I mean, even some people don't even go that far find the foam.
We see that a lot in the boats that have a small rear deck, but the only access you have is right there in the center where the gas tank is, and the rest of the back deck is all filled full of foam.
Yeah.
A lot of people don't want to cut all that stuff out and get into that foam and have to remove it all. Or when they do, they'll just cut a square or a circle or a rectangle where they're going to put their hatches at and just take that foam out and put a little box in there.
Yeah.
Which I have found, and you found over the last couple of years, that's a complete waste of space.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want a box, people, like, I don't know what the thing is with boxes. Like, people are like, I want a box. I want a box that I open up, and that's the only thing I see.
Yeah.
I see way more utility in having a big, wide, open area with multiple access points, or like in your boat where you have one big access point.
Well, you know, my first build, I was under that mindset, too. Like, I need a box.
Yeah.
And I think that just transitions to a little less knowledge about boats and marine stuff in general, plus you're just basing it off of what you see when you open up a new bass boat. I mean, they've all got boxes, or they look like tubs. Like,
yeah, they're like set down inside the lead, inside the dry track.
And just in your head, you think that it's got to look or be that way.
Yeah.
And now, and today, I'm the complete opposite. Like, I don't even like putting vertical supports in because I'm like, that's going to take up space.
Wide open.
Yeah, just give me an open concept. Like, I'm building a freaking kitchen for a house in 2024. Open concept, no walls. Just let me throw my crap in there.
I had two reasons that I like the open concept more now is, like, if I take a small, like a 4 or 5 foot rod with me for catching bait, I can actually stick it underneath the deck now. Before, you know, when I had everything compartmentalized or I have everything kind of squared off, I could never fit a rod down underneath the deck. But now that I have that space, I can fit a 5.5 foot rod underneath my front deck. And my front deck's not huge by any means.
Right.
But because I have the big wide open space, I can go in from one side and stick it into one side of the deck, and it comes all the way up to the front of the boat. But it's all out of my way, and it's not laying on the floor. It's not laying on the deck. It's completely out of the way.
Which you could also do for oars.
Yep.
Nets.
That was the next thing I was going to say is paddles.
Yep.
I have broke down a couple of times and had to use a stupid orange collapsible paddle.
That thing's terrible.
I like having a big full size paddle now because I'm always worried that I'm gonna get stuck on the lake or on the river or something.
You're hanging out with him, you might
probably will. Yeah, I've had that happen a few times, but I would much rather have my kayak paddle inside the boat than I would that little small orange collapsible one, because the few times that I have broke down and I needed to get back, that was my only mode of transportation, was that little bitty teeny tiny orange collapsible paddle. And I paddled for hours. I mean, hours on 3 different occasions.
That is 100. Never mind.
Go ahead.
I should say it.
Go ahead.
That's 100% a t-shirt idea.
It probably is. The
collapsible orange oar club.
Yeah. It's like, we've all been there. Like, they all say that walked uphill to school 12 miles in snow both ways barefoot.
Shoot, news technology was a collapsible one. Try paddling with that.
I paddled up river 37 miles to get back to the boat ramp, and all I had was a collapsible paddle. The other thing, and I don't want to sound like we're trying to be cheap here, but I am cheap.
Mm-hmm.
You save a ton of money in your build by not having to buy or make a box for every hatch that you have.
Oh, dude, those boxes cost as much as the lid.
Yes. Now, with one caveat, there's one little but, and that is a day box.
That thing's sweet.
Okay.
Now you see me fun with it.
I know. I'm gonna eat my words here. I have always made fun of the day box and the lunch box and the night box and the afternoon box and the cooler box and all these freaking boxes. The day box, I wish I now had in my boat, and I've seen what you actually use it for. Just to have a place to put my wallet, my cell phone, my keys, and my bug spray during the summertime would be phenomenal. Because right now, my method is I have my kayak crate from my old kayak. And that's what I have all my fishing lures in, is in that kayak crate. It's an old milk crate.
Okay.
And I love that thing because it's compact. I can take the whole entire thing out of my boat, and I got all that space in there. I can clean, you know, I can move stuff around, but it's there when I need it, and it's out of the way when I don't need it. Right now my method is I have one little small corner of that kayak crate that I have stacked full of, like, I got some Hey Dude wipes in there.
Yeah.
I got an extra pair of sunglasses and like a sunshade for my face. I very gently stack my wallet, my keys, and then the bug spray on top of that to hold it all in place. And every time I go fishing, by the time I get back, it has somehow weaseled its way down into the bottom of that kayak crate. And I got to go digging for it to get my keys so I can go get the truck and get the trailer down the boat ramp. So I apologize to all the bass fishermen for all the mean things I said about your day boxes over the years. I kind of wish I had one now.
I'll say this. I have a 3-inch deep one in mine, and I think the sweet spot is six inches.
Really?
I do believe so. Now,
what are you currently running? I know you've got a lot more stuff that you take with you. What all are you putting in your day box?
Spare pair of sunglasses. But I also put my main pair in there in the morning because it's not bright enough for me to wear sunglasses.
Okay.
I keep an extra prop nut and washers in there because my extra prop I keep in the very back of the boat.
Okay.
The
That's really smart, by the way.
Extra kill switch.
Mm-hmm. Also super smart to have.
The registration for the boat. Okay. I have a little registration card that I keep in there. I throw my keys in there, my wallet, and even my phone, to be honest with you.
Just to keep it out of the sun?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the biggest reason why.
They overheat.
So quick. I keep like a rag in there, clean the screens.
Okay. When you did your boat build video, you opened it up and showed everybody, and it was wintertime, so you had like, I think I remember a pair of gloves.
Yeah,
and some other like a hot hand.
Hot hands.
Stuff like that.
Yep.
Stuff that you like need immediately while you're fishing.
Right. Or just, yeah, need immediately or not going to be going into that compartment necessarily throughout the day.
Yeah.
Like you would your tackle stuff, you know.
Speaking of storage, this is something that Mike has been a big proponent of in his videos, and we haven't done it yet a whole lot. We've installed a few in boats. I'm actually going to put one in my boat, but the vertical day box, like tackle storage type deal.
Yes.
I know it'd be hard to put one in your boat because mm-hmm. of the way it's set up, but like in my boat, the only thing I really need is one Plano box with extra dragon weights and like maybe a few hooks and a few swivels and things like that. Just in case I break one off, I can just go ahead and tie it up.
Right.
Instead of having to go into my deck and go pull out a whole box, it's already like right there and accessible.
Yeah, but like you could have not done that vertical wall in the front deck.
And just did all under storage?
Under storage.
Probably could have. The only reason I think I wanted it was because I knew that was going to be where my batteries were going to go. And I didn't want my batteries just kind of sitting out there in la-la land. Yeah. I wanted them, you know, up against that wall.
Right.
And that's what I have them there for. Now, going back on it, we're talking about planning phases. One of the videos I'm going to be doing is redoing all my electrical in my boat because I had this genius idea, and I didn't think it out very well, but in my head, it was brilliant. I was like, oh, I don't really use any of the electronics on my boat very often. I usually just turn the kill switch or turn the main power on,
yeah.
Turn the circuit breaker on, and if I'm running at night, I usually keep all my lights on, so there's no point in having an accessible switch panel, and I put it down inside one of my hatches.
Yeah.
That was the dumbest thing I ever did.
Yeah.
And I had to rip it all out and start over.
I mean, that one night, we went in there like seven times.
Yeah, turning headlights on and off, and yeah, the nav lights.
The hatch slams down.
Yep, like, and makes a ton of noise.
Being picky, but.
And had I thought it through, my idea for having those batteries up against that back wall of the front deck, I actually probably would have moved them somewhere else because that back wall of the front deck would have been the perfect spot to cut a hole and put my battery on-off switch and all my switches for my switch panel.
Yeah.
So that I could access everything. But now I can't do that because that's where I built it. Battery. I built in a battery tray right there. And they live there. There's really nowhere else for them to go because I designed a boat that way because I wasn't thinking about it long term when I made the plan. I was just like, I got to build a boat. I got to do it right now. And I went after it, and it was stupid.
I don't know. I like your boat, though. It's set up really good. Aside from that, you want to have accessibility to those switches. You really end up starting to need them and hit them when you don't think you would ever need to. Those are the moments when you don't want to be digging through crap or opening up hatches and all that stuff.
Yeah, you're right. Exactly.
I mean, heck, for me, it's the dark.
Yeah.
Which
is primarily when I fish.
Now I just go over there. I hit my 12 volt. I know where my panel's at. I don't even look over. I just start slipping. If I hear the bilge pump going, it's not that one.
Now, like, one thing we implemented in your boat that I want to do in mine when I redo the wiring is putting the headlight switch right there where I'm driving at, because when I was on Oconee last weekend, I was out riding around. It was dark. It was raining, and I end up there was quite a few people that were headed back to the boat ramp, and it's like midnight. I wish I would have had my switch there because I kept having to run up to the front of the boat, open up the hatch, and turn my headlights off so I didn't blind everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of just being a jerk and leaving them on like everybody else was doing, I was like, well, I'm gonna do the right thing and turn the headlights off.
Yeah, that was probably the smartest thing we did in mine.
Yeah.
Was put that back there because you're controlling the motor, yet you can be cautious of other people mm-hmm. around you and not blinding them, but also have that light right there if you need it.
And that's what I wish I had.
Yeah.
Because I've had multiple. So, like, when I run the river at night, it's not that big of a deal because I don't really see a whole lot of people. I can usually just leave the headlights on, run to where I'm going to go, and run all the way back and never really see anybody. But when I'm on a lake, I end up running into a lot of people, and I can't stand it when people leave their headlights on. I know that that's, like, the cool thing to do now, and they're very handy. It's nice to be able to see where you're going at night instead of, you know, like, kind of doing one of those, like, guessing thing and holding up a flashlight real quick and then turning it off. It would be nice to have it where it's accessible. And, again, just goes back to that planning phase of building a boat. Got into a rush, wasn't thinking about any of that stuff, just started ripping stuff apart.
Well, I mean, we've also come a long way since then, too, so.
Well, yeah, and that's what we're here to do is share our experience with people because we've been there, done that already, and not just in our boats, but in customer boats, too.
Yeah. What I want to know from you guys is what's your biggest factor when it comes to getting ready to begin a boat build, right? Like, is it budget? Is it your skill level? Is it maybe your knowledge or the time you've spent on the water or in a boat and just in general? Yeah, I think that holds a lot of people up, too, because we do get a lot of first-time boat owners, and man, they get so nervous. I was on the phone with a guy today, scared to pull his bench sheets out, thinking the whole boat's going to pancake on him the second he puts it in the water.
For anybody that is wondering, I have done it on not just my boat, I've done it on several other boats, but I took the both of the benches, front and back, out of my boat. I had no benches in my boat whatsoever. We put a mud motor on it and went and drove it around quite a few times. It flexes like crazy. You can see the sides of the boat just kind of doing one of these numbers when you're riding around.
Right.
You're more than likely long-term to damage the boat. Right. You fold one in half pretty easily because there's nothing holding it side to side.
Yeah.
But for those that are worried about it, if you do take your bench seats out temporarily while you're building your boat, it's not going to fold in half.
Yeah, I mean, you're going to be reinforcing all that with your decks,
yeah,
your front and your rear deck. So.
And most of the time, what we wind up putting in is stronger than what was there in the first place.
Yes.
Those bench seats are usually super, super thin. They got like four or five rivets on each side, a couple of rivets in the bottom. Yeah, what gives them all their integrity is they're slap full of foam.
Yeah.
And that's why people are able to put, you know, pedestals on top of them and screw them into place and actually hold us because they're slap full of foam.
That's literally the foam.
If you were to take the foam out
that thing,
and try to put it on one of those benches that's like, you know, 063 or 080 or something like that.
That's what we were talking about earlier. You got to resupport all that stuff.
Yep. You will fold one of those bench seats in a heartbeat. Yep. That's another one that we get a lot is people asking about reusing the bench seats, just cutting them open and putting storage box in there or making it a storage area. I personally think that's one of the biggest mistakes you can make in your boat build. They limit you to how you can build your boat. They're usually never the height that you need them to be. You know, like when we were building my boat, I wanted my deck up as high as I could get it because I knew I was going to be boat fishing out of it at some point. And if I would have used the top of my benches, I would have been a good 4 inches lower than I am now.
It's easier to work on if you just pull it out.
Yeah.
Imagine a 1436, you're going to put a live well in the bench seat. You cut that open, you get all that foam out, and now you have to work inside that bench. You have to get your drill in there. You got to get your rivet tool in there. You got to get everything inside that bench in order to put it together the way it needs to be put together. So rip it out, put in a couple framing pieces.
Now, when we say rip it out, we don't mean legitimately rip it out.
And like rip it out. No, I'm just kidding.
No. That's what I did in my boat. And I did a YouTube video on it. I showed everybody that I popped all the rivets out and refilled the rivet holes.
Didn't you? Yeah.
Yes. And while that's okay, you can do that. Yeah. We have discovered that there's a better way.
Yeah.
If you're going to be framing with, like, say, inch and a half angle, trace an inch and a half line all the way around the bench and leave that inch and a half stuck to the side of the boat. Mm-hmm. That solves two problems. One, now you don't have to fill any rivet holes,
which is a nightmare.
Yes.
An absolute nightmare.
You've already got the rivet holes filled. You're not messing with the original rivets that were in there.
Yep.
The second thing is it gives you a place to build off of. You can put a vertical wall off of one. You can put one of those little side walls like we put in your boat.
And it's going to be a very strong piece to attach it to as well.
Yes.
That size, like inch and a half, you got a lot of strength in that little piece.
Yep. But it also, especially in the smaller boats like the 1436s and 1448s and 1648s, that bench is actually used in lieu of a rib, especially in riveted boats.
Yeah.
So that it goes down the sidewall and it goes across the bottom of the boat, and there's usually a flange on it that goes to the bottom of the boat and it's riveted in. If you take it completely out, you've eliminated two of the ribs in your boat.
Right.
So if you leave that inch and a half, you're still leaving some structural integrity that you can build off of to mount your subfloor.
Yep.
And all you need to do is just take you a piece of angle, you know, mount it flat on top so that you can attach your subfloor. And then the upright part will actually attach to the old part of the bench. And you can use that as a starting point to jump off your subfloor from there.
Right. And we've been doing that for a while. I mean, the first time that we really implemented that in a good video form would be that 4-day build that we did up at Nate's.
Yes.
So if you just go to the Tiny Boat Nation YouTube channel and you just look for the playlist, like 4-day build, that is a perfect example of repurposing those bench seats to build your subfloor off of. And I think we were even able to use some of it for a deck, but I don't remember.
Well, you can, especially if you got a bigger boat, 14, not length, width, like you got 48-inch wide bottom, mm-hmm. those benches are going to be wide, and you're going to have a big piece of material there that you can cut out and use for something, whether right. it be, you know, a vertical wall, or, you know, if you wanted to separate off one of your hatches, you know, and make a little compartment, or you wanted to use the wall for your rod locker or something like that. Those yeah. pieces come in handy for that.
Yeah.
It's basically free sheet aluminum.
Mm-hmm. Which is very valuable nowadays.
Oh my God, aluminum is so expensive.
You want to try the single barrel?
Yeah, let's do it.
What'd you think of the 12?
I kind of the same as you. I like the 9 better. There was two notes that I picked up in the second and third sip of the 12, which was a very, very light cherry,
mm-hmm.
Which is very unlike Jim Beam products.
Did it come in real late?
Very late in the finish, and it was very, very light. It was very light. It wasn't a heavy, like, oh, yes. that's a cherry.
I just noticed
like, it. Is that what I'm tasting?
I noticed it real quick. I was like, huh? What? Where did that come from?
What does that bottle go for?
Oh, I think, I don't know. Retail, I think I paid $115 for it.
$115?
$115.
Oh, I'm grabbing the 12.
You're going
again.
Back to it. You must like it.
Sorry, wrong one.
I think I paid $115 for it. I think that 18 was closer to $200. May have been like $180, $150, somewhere in there. Mm. Heck, that could have been $150 for all I know. I had a lot of bottles that day. Good bottles that day. I got drawn for one of those raffles playing those adult games.
One of your adult games.
Yeah, and walked out with it, so.
I'll be honest with you, I would rather, just money-wise, I would rather spend that same money on either the 9, or I would go with that Booker that we reviewed last time. I think that Booker was better than that 12.
I like the Booker better than that 12, too, yeah.
Yeah, that not super impressive.
But all day drinking that, the regular 9 is...
Yeah, it's
would
not
be
bad.
Just fine.
But this right here, this is a whole nother ball game.
This is my baby. I love this one.
Everything that the 9 and the 12 do on the nose, a little mm-hmm. bit higher proof. You can smell it. You get that ethanol hit, but it is. Not,
it's nowhere near as bad as the 12.
No, but it's not overpowering like the 12 was. Mm-hmm. You don't smell just straight ethanol. And this is not a new bottle. We've had this one open for a while. Well past the neck pour.
It still smells extremely sweet to me. Sweeter than the regular 9.
That one's definitely heavy on the caramel.
I think that's why I like it. I really like caramel.
I taste a lot more in that one. I taste a lot more of the oak influence, but it's well balanced. It's not yes. overpowering like the 12 was.
It doesn't choke you out.
No.
Well, let's kind of dive back into this real quick as far as best time of the year to build your boat. You know, the marine industry during that time in winter is a little more flexible.
Generally.
Generally.
Generally is slower.
You
all
can
around.
Usually get things faster. You can usually find good deals on things. We typically run an end of the year sale.
Yes. Which brings up a great point. There is one caveat to the winter time being the best time is Black Friday sale and Christmas sale. Those are times of the year where everybody in the marine industry gets big mm-hmm. and not big, but they get busy because of the sales.
Those 2 weeks.
Yes. Those 2 weeks leading up to Black Friday, the day of Black Friday, and then usually that week or two before Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Christmas is not as bad as Black Friday. Black Friday is so bad around here that I almost want to call out sick every single time.
Yeah. This kind of goes complete opposite, though. When do you think the best time of the year to buy a boat is?
All right. So there's two.
Okay.
The end of whatever fishing season that you particular are looking for. So, like, the end of bass fishing season, I would say, is sometime in that summertime,
okay.
where it's too hot to fish. Most guys are going, you know, taking families on vacation, and I really think about fishing over the summer. It's just really, really hot. That's usually a great time for not only one to find people that are getting out of boats because they're not going to fish over the summer, but you also get those guys that didn't take care of their boat the year before. They've had some kind of problem early in the season during the spring or during the spawn or right in the early part of the summer, and they're just fed up by the time summer comes around, and they're like, screw this boat, I want to get rid of it.
Yep, just make a quick buck off of it or something.
Yep, so the end of whatever fishing season, so like for cat fishing, there's really not a great time because there's not a lot of boats aimed specifically at catfish unless you're looking at like a pro cat or something like that. But catfishing season would probably be when the spawn happens. That's when a lot of people are getting out of it. The other great time to buy a used boat, especially a John boat, is about halfway through duck season.
Yeah.
There's a whole lot of people who get into duck hunting or want to get into duck hunting. They go buy a boat and they have all these great high hopes for how well they're going to do with season, or they're hoping they're going to go out on public land and do some hunting, and they wind up finding out that there's 5,000 people there. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder than it looks. Or they don't get the chance because they can't get off work, or they can't, you know, get that week off to go to Arkansas or go to Louisiana. They can't
afford to.
Or they can't afford to. Or you get the guys that, and I've seen this happen more than once, they will buy a boat prior to duck season with the intent of fixing it up for duck season. You get busy deer hunting because deer hunting season is right before duck season. Mm-hmm. And then duck season rolls around. They don't have time to work on the boat, so they end up finding somebody that already has one and they're trying to dump theirs.
Yeah,
that's usually another good time. Now, the only thing about the duck hunting boats is that's really only going to apply to your John boat style.
Correct.
Duck boats. The Havocs and the Prodigies and the High Shoals boats and all those, like Uncle Jay's and those true duck hunting mud boats, those don't really go on sale.
No.
You catch those when somebody's going through a divorce, when somebody's broke and needs money, or when they're upgrading to another boat. And they usually hold their value pretty well.
Right.
Generally. Now, the best way to find a boat in those kind of realms, those true mud boat or duck hunting style boats, is when you find one wrecked. You find some idiot that bought one brand new and then tried to go beaver dam jumping, and they wind up flipping it on its side and put a giant dent in the front of it, and they know they can't get any money for it.
I don't know if I'd suggest buying one of those.
I would.
Yeah?
With not a lot of money and a good skilled fabricator, those things can be fixed. They're not always easy to fix, and it may not look exactly the way that you want it to, but if you get one with some heavy front-end damage, those boats are tough enough to where the hull is going to be okay. It's going to be that front bumper, that front duck bill area is going to be kind of messed up. Those can usually be either just cut off and put something new on there, or they could be fixed.
Mm-hmm.
And it might not always be the prettiest fixes, but I mean, the duck can't tell what it looks like from 50 feet up in the sky anyway, so who cares? Because by the time they see the boat, they're going to be getting shot at.
The only people that shoot them are the ones wearing Sitka, so
I'm sure they can see Sitka camo.
The Sitka gear. Oh, Sitka gear.
Yeah.
You know? So I think you're wrong there.
Might be. You can start some serious arguments over duck hunting camo.
All right, let's go ahead and wrap this up. Let's do a 1-2-3 comparison, or not comparison, but which one do you like, kind of like, least like?
I don't dislike any of them. Out of the three, and a lot of this is based on cost, my least favorite is the Knob Creek 12.
Yes.
I think it's overpriced and overrated for what it is. There are two other bottles that are highly available and easy to get a hold of and for a decent price that are much better than the 12.
Mm-hmm.
Probably top of the list, I'd be looking at the single barrel store pick. I've had two different ones now, and they've both been really good.
Yep.
And then I put the Knob Creek 9 in the middle.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you really can't go wrong with any of it. I will tell you this. If you can find that 12 for a decent price, it's not a bottle to pass on. I would still get it.
Yeah.
There's nothing really like super negative I can say about it. For 100 proof, it does drink a little hot for me. I think the 9 at 100 proof drinks way better than the 12 does.
Yes.
It does have a few different flavors than the 9 does. But overall, just the price is what kills that one, and the hype behind it.
I'm the same. Same.
You think the same?
Yeah. I'm going to be honest with you. Up until tonight, I didn't realize how similar the 9 and the single barrel were. Like tonight, I felt like I could tell that they were very, very close.
So everything on the 9 that I like is just intensified in the single barrel version.
Yes.
It's, you know, it's got that good classic bourbon notes. You got that vanilla and caramel, a little bit of oak, a little bit of sweetness. There is that little bit of nuttiness to it. I won't say it's straight peanut butter, but there is a nutty type flavor that kind of hangs around on that one. And it's because it is a Beam product. That is a typical Beam flavor profile. But all of that good stuff, you pump it up to 120 proof in a single barrel, is, I think, way better.
Yeah.
And I actually like the oak influence on the single barrel better than I do on the 9.
Yeah.
It's more prevalent. You can taste it, but I think it has a better flavor overall.
No, I agree. All right, guys, we're going to go ahead and wrap up this episode. Thank you for listening to the Drain Plug podcast presented by TBNation.net. Any of the parts or products that we talked about today can be found at TBNation.net. If you guys have any questions, comments, concerns, please leave them in the comment section down below. If you're listening to this on a podcast platform, please rate the show. Any feedback that you guys have for us as far as what you guys want us to talk about, what you guys want to see, bourbon suggestions.
Yeah, yeah.
Whatever you want, whatever you got, please let us know. We're all ears. We're trying to start something new, I guess, in a market that doesn't even exist, really. Yeah. So help us out.
Well, we get so many questions. It's kind of hard to narrow in on one single topic that we can talk about for a while because we wind up bouncing into 47 different other things.
Yeah, we're a little squirrely.
We did that tonight a little bit, but that's okay.
You guys get the point. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you for the support. Thank you for contacting us, emailing us, everything.
Even the bass fishermen tomorrow.
And the sailboat guys.
Even if you have a tournament tomorrow. It's okay. All right. And don't ever forget your drain plug.
Your drain plug.
Don't want to be that guy. I have been that guy.
See you guys.